Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello and welcome to day four of Guitar Nerd's Gear of the Year 2016.
Day four!
I'm your host Mark Packham, joined today by Matt Knight.
Hello!
Jay Cross.
That is me!
And Joe Branton,
well,
making
there.
Noises because he's excited because today is Best Bass Product 2016.
And heart excitement,
listener's
exhaustion.
Choice. We are six hours into recording, something like that.
It's all become a blur.
I don't know what time everyone got up, but I was up super early to get here as well, so it's been worth it. I like hanging out.
Ella got up today. Ella's going to France for one day. She's going to Paris for one day today.
That sounds right.
You guys are so rich.
She is, someone bought her a ticket. No, long story, but anyway.
One-way ticket.
She got up at, yeah.
Was it you?
She was like,
was it you?
Thanks, mate. She got up at 4:30, so I've been up since 4:30. Which is, you know, so if I flag a little in the bass
I got home around then, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, so today we are discussing the Best Bass Product 2016. To join the already selected Reverend Billy Corgan, Gretsch Streamliner Double Cut, Boss Katana 50, Honey Boy 5-Watt, Echoline Roadrunner, Rocksmith Bright Switch, Barefoot Buttons, Boss ESA, Ernie Ball St. Vincent, Yamaha Trans Acoustic, and Ranger FX Dwarf Bleep in our final tomorrow to decide what is the best gear of 2016.
If you've missed, I'm sad that it's nearly over.
I know. Right. If you've missed the previous episodes, do go and check back from Monday to now.
Well, you've just spoiled it.
Well, that's true, actually. Yeah, I've just ruined it. Forget what I just said. Go back and listen to those episodes.
You can listen to it for the fun conversation.
Yeah, you'll find how we got there. So today, Joe Branton, this is your domain very much. We're talking best Bass Product 2016.
Wow.
Let's do a quick rundown of what's in the list and we can start knocking things off straight away. So, Seymour Duncan Studio Bass Compressor, Tech 21 Bass Fly Rig 5, the Ashdown Rootmaster 800, the Orange 4-stroke head, the PV Mini Mega head, the Electromonics Bass Preacher, the Boss BC1X, the Orange O-Bass, the EHX Bass Clone, the Fender Flea Jazz Bass, the Orange Crush Bass Series, the Dr. NoFX Blackmagic Bass Fuzz, and the Mark Bass Nano Mark 300.
Pow.
So, straight away, there's a couple of products, a couple of doubles there. Do we want from Orange?
It's good that Orange have... Well, Orange have been great at releasing sort of, you know, bits and bobs this year. Three whole things, three whole new editions.
Indeed. Well, we
you
did
think of knocking some
well,
stuff.
We
up.
Did say that it was only one product per
That's
brand
true.
Per category. So, do you want to keep the O bass or do you want to keep the Crush bass series?
Well, there's also the 4-stroke head
and the 4-stroke as well. Yeah,
things.
I didn't
so
even
three,
notice that.
Three entries on there. Well, I'd say we'll lose the Crush bass series.
Okay.
That said, it's very, very good.
It's too late. I've deleted it now. I can't go back. There's no such thing as an undo on these
it's
computers.
It's very good. The Crush, but it probably is the best practice amp for bass out there, especially because the cabs are all ported, even the small sized ones. But I don't care about practice amps especially,
okay.
So it's probably not going
to
win.
One thing I think doesn't need to be on there, Bass Clone.
Okay, because
I just think Well, I just think...
Well, let's deal with the orange stuff, because there's two, still two orange pieces, the O-Base or the four-stroke head. What are you getting rid of?
Does the O-Base really belong in the list?
It doesn't need to exist.
Okay, should I have taken that... Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? It's a really weird one.
It's a very weird base. It's very,
it's not a bad base, though. Like, it's good.
My problem is that they've kind of gone, we need to... We need to make a base. We need to make some bases, but we haven't really got anyone to design a base. So, and I, you know, we could just find a factory that makes a base. It reminds me of the Flea base.
No, mate. This was designed from the ground up.
Really?
The guitars were not.
What's his name? Aid.
I thought it was like the guitars.
It is Aid, isn't it? He, as a bass player, he was very involved in designing that. In fact, he couldn't be more wrong, because there are even things like...
He didn't do a very good job then.
But I think he did. It's a great looking bass. But even things like the precision pickup that they've chosen to put in is a few like centimetres closer to the neck than it is on a Fender, and that was a conscious choice by Aid to create a sort of subbier, more vintage sounding.
There's actually loads of design work.
I'm going to say, is the four stroke different enough from the OB1 series to deserve
but
a place?
But it's completely different.
Okay, well, what would you rather keep, the four stroke or the orange O bass?
It's difficult. I think the four stroke is great because they've introduced they've tried to go for the opposite of the OB1. It's a completely clean platform head that has its own compression and multi-band sort of EQ. I think they're great, and Orange have really upped their bass game recently. From just having they had the Terra bass, which really wasn't very good, but it was sort of an affordable entry level valve-ish head for bass players. And obviously they have the what's it called? Their head, the AD200, which is fantastic. But having the OB1 and having the four stroke are two like really cool, very astutely marketed products for bass. It's a very cool thing. The O bass, I understand everyone's like the only problem with the O bass is that it says orange on the headstock, and I don't think that's a problem.
I don't think that's a problem at all. I just think it's a very
I personally just don't like the design.
Really, you don't? I see it's a single cut Les Paul style design. It's really
but
good.
With
the finishes
sort of
look great.
Pickup just slapped in the middle. Like I know you say it is placed, but it just doesn't look like that.
Right. Okay.
Is that not just because of what we're used to.
I think everything about it is well designed. So they've gone for like a super 70s look. The neck is like big, deep, thick and fat, and has a Rickenbacker style headstock. Like it's a decent bridge on there. It's a better bridge than you get on Fenders for the price point.
The design elements just don't hang together. Right.
I think it's not
a good looking instrument.
So strange. I think it is the 70s, it's exactly right for Orange, for that company.
Yeah.
That is exactly the base I think they should do. It even comes with, you get two scratch plates with it, so you can choose. I think it's well cool. It's a great product.
Would you rather keep that or the four-stroke head?
Well, it's difficult. The four-stroke head is a much more serious product because it's something...
Well, I'm gonna have to push you. We need to nail this down.
So you guys all dislike the O-Base, right? It's not just me voting on it.
I just think in terms of bases,
it's just a bit ugly.
Not even necessarily. Yeah, I think I don't necessarily like the look, but I just think it's not
I don't
a
get
product.
That.
I just don't think it's a product that Orange necessarily needed to do.
Firstly, I don't know why it exists. Secondly, I think it looks
like
hideous.
Aid's a really good guy, and you know he's an amazing engineer. And obviously, being a bass player and having the chance to personally involve yourself in the making of an instrument is fantastic. But do you necessarily then need to actually make that instrument?
Orange have done some very weird stuff this year. Like we didn't even talk about like the headphones.
Yeah,
they brought out the headphones, and like we spoke about it briefly. But if you've not watched the documentary that they put together about the headphones, it's so weird. And basically they put together this like 10-minute documentary that suggested that the only thing that Cliff Cooper wanted to do was create headphones. That's what he wanted to do, you know, back in the 60s. He wanted to create headphones, but he didn't have the money to put the necessary R&D into doing it. So he was like, well, look, I can build amps. So I'll just build amps for a little while and tick over until I can get these headphones ready. And the last 50 years or whatever have just been him building up enough money so that he can produce these headphones.
This is tongue-in-cheek.
Which is tongue-in-cheek, of course. But, like, it's just so weird because, like, obviously it's a joke documentary, a mockumentary, but, like... So few companies would have the gall to try and get away with doing this.
The thing is, it
seems like they're doing some weird stuff at the moment.
Well, they have. That's not their only odd advertising campaign. They, of course, ran the Obi-Wan versus four-stroke head video where they got a couple of... I can't remember the names of the bands. I think the guy from Mastodon and the guy from Hell Yeah, because I think they're actually brothers.
Yeah.
And they got them to base off against each other in sort of a fake, like, 70s... X Factor style show in the middle of a park.
Like,
yeah, exactly, and that's what I was going to say. I think this is a really not where I expected you guys to fall on this orange stuff. In that, what we're talking about is a cool old 70s brand release a cool old 70s bass, and then you guys don't get why they've done it. That makes perfect sense. And then a big brand make accessory products like everyone does, and unlike everyone else, they go, it is a bit funny that we're doing these accessory products, should we just take the mick a bit? And they release
that's fair.
Honest advertising.
I've got no problem with that at all. I just think the O-Base doesn't look very nice.
I'm just not a huge fan of the O-Base.
Fair enough. It's not a serious product.
The four stroke is I'm not into it personally. I can see why you would be into it because you need to be able to pay attention to those stupid, like, mid frequencies.
It doesn't matter, does it?
Let's be honest.
No,
and a compression control, whatever. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah,
I don't think it's as good as the OB series. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we'll cut the O bass.
Okay, we'll cut the O bass.
Got a decent honourable mention.
And the two Electromonics products on here, the Bass Preacher and the Bass Clone. Mm-hmm. Which one's sticking around?
Well, the Bass Preacher. Which is their compressor?
Yep.
Should stay.
Okay, so we're losing the Bass Clone.
The Bass Clone is obviously just a bass frequency version of the Small Clone.
Yes.
But
it's a chorus.
I use the Small Clone. Bass.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So do you want to give us a quick rundown of what's left and why you think they deserve to be on here or do not deserve to be on here?
Okay. Well, we've got some cool things. So we've got the Seymour Duncan Studio Bass Compressor, which is Seymour Duncan aiming to create a multiband compressor,
which we did a video of. It sounded pretty good.
It's very good. And the thing that has that makes it great is that you can blend in your clean signal with the compression, which, as we've mentioned loads of times, is a really important element of using compression on bass, because it allows you to not have an overly squashed tone, and it really helps with if you play more aggressively with sort of keeping some of that attack that you lose in compression. So a really cool product from Seymour Duncan. I seem to remember the price point for this being pretty good. Yeah, $169 is what they're sitting at, which undercuts the MXR bass compressor multiband, undercuts the Boss bass compressor, which is £200. The Boss bass compressor is also on this list.
Yes, I was going to say we've got three compressors on here now.
Let's talk about them together. Then we've got the Seymour Duncan Studio bass compressor, the Boss BC1X, and we've got the Electro Harmonics Bass Preacher. The Electro Harmonics is the most different from all of those because the Electro Harmonics is a traditional analog compressor with its with the sort of traditional like MXR super comp style control. So you've just got volume and sustain, and then I think you've got a little toggle switch which allows you to switch the attack between fast, medium and slow, which is totally pointless because I've known no bass players who would use a slow attack on a compressor. It's not what you use it for. But what's great about the Bass Preacher is it's £59.
Yeah,
which
that's
kind
tough
of,
to beat.
Yeah, which undercuts an awful lot of other things on the market. That said, it is basically a sort of Dynacomp voiced for bass.
Yeah.
I know I'd probably still buy a Dynacomp. So which leaves sort of the other two, which are great.
So we're saying out of those two, we're going to knock the Bass Preacher off this list. Okay, fine.
I think, again, it's worth pointing out that Seymour Duncan just flying under the radar with cool products.
Great pedals, yeah. Like we talked about the Vapor Trail.
The Vapor Trail and the Palladium didn't make it into the top.
But it's still a great product.
But it's still a great pedal. They just keep plugging away. Keep doing it. Great, great company.
Few other comparable things on here. The Malt-based Nanomark 300, the PV Mini Mega, and I guess that's it for mini heads. Yeah. How do we feel about those?
Well, he didn't like either of them.
Actually,
do you?
Actually, I think the PV is pretty cool.
Well, you're unbelievable.
So the PV is 1,000 watts.
It is.
It's a 1,000 watt head for £619.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah, fine. Yeah, it's a small head. But I actually really liked the Mini Max, which they brought out before this, probably a year previous, which was PV making a super, like, this will fit in the front of your gig bag sort of
head. They were tiny.
Yeah, but they were cool. They were perfectly good. Now, these sort of things are always going to suffer with Class D power sections because it just means that everything sounds a little bit... crap. It's fine if you want to play clean.
Can I jump in? Because we went and tried this out, didn't we?
We did.
Compared to the Malt-based Nanomark 300.
And what did you think?
Jay, what were your opinions of those two?
The head and shoulders above the PV sat the Malt-based.
Why is that? It's so good. It sounded so much more open.
Yeah,
I thought
it sounded more like... If what you're aiming for, I mean, certainly what I'm aiming for with a bass head is something that sounds like an Ampeg SVT without having to carry around
an
Ampeg SVT.
But that's absolutely not what the Mark bass will have because...
It totally does.
It sounds like that.
Wicked. It sounds,
you really enjoy that clipping sound, do you, when you push the
gain? It didn't clip, honestly.
Rubbish.
Really good.
There's no such thing as a solid state amp head that doesn't clip when you push the gain.
They were really good.
No such thing.
Jay,
I thought,
as much as I enjoy you biting at Mark's ankles when it comes to Mark bass, I really don't understand how you can play that head
I love this. I'm on the Mark bass site for it. They've got bullet points about it. What's the number one bullet point?
The weight.
Unbelievable power to weight ratio.
But that's the selling point of it.
That's just ridiculous.
I don't care about what it sounds like.
The thing is, that's quantifiable. You can go, this is very loud and it's very small. Now, whether you like the sound or you don't like the sound is very difficult to put into a bullet point. That's personal preference. What they can actually put at the top of that list is they can say, this is very loud and it fits literally into the front pocket of a gig bag. It's so small.
Yeah, I love that. That is cool.
Like, I could go to this practice I've got to go to tonight with just a gig bag and I could take my amp and
that's
my guitar
cool. I don't mind mini heads that actually are mini, like the rest of the Mark bass range actually aren't small enough to fit in the front of the gig bag before they defeat the point and you still have to rack mount them if you don't want them to break, so defeats the purpose completely. But this is cool. The size is very cool. The thing it's missing is the two features that I actually like about Mark bass, which is their VLE and VPF.
Yes, they've gone away from that on these.
Yeah, I know. The VLE, I think, is, and actually, coming back to completely what you say, that you want something that sounds like an SVT.
Yeah,
VPF is the way to get that.
No, VLE. VPF is a mid-scoop. So that's the way to make it sound very modern. The VLE is a loudspeaker emulator. So it enhances like your subs and your low end, which is great. Like it makes Mark bass sound vintage when you use the VLE.
They take the top end off, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But also enhance like your sub frequencies as well. So
for quality, in terms of the build quality, I think the Mark bass Nano Mark 3 is so much better than the PV Mini Mega.
It's weird because for me, I'm not a bass player.
Really?
No.
You have been in the past.
I have been in the past. I used to play
a Mark bass for guitar, didn't you?
I played Mark bass for guitar as well. And I look at the PV, and although it's got the Cosmos on it, which is one of the greatest little rack units of all time, super sub technology, it just looks... There's two things. I just think it looks a bit cheap and it looks overly complicated.
And that is kind of the feel that I got from it when we went and tried it out. The Mark bass, you literally just plugged it in straight away and it sounded loud and big sounding. The PV just sounded really boxy, even though it's got so much power there.
Okay, well, I'd be willing to keep the Mark bass in. As much as I attack them, they make good quality stuff.
It's a really good amp, honestly. Should we lose the PV Mini Mega off this list?
I think so.
Okay, fine. So two more comparable things then. The Orange 4-stroke head and the Ashdown Routemaster 800. Yeah. This is very much your territory.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Routemaster series by Ashdown, they re-engineered them this year, because the Routemaster series has existed now for a couple of years, which was, the Routemaster was the reinvention of their Mag series, which you see in basically every pub backline up and down the country.
And rehearsal rooms and everything.
Exactly. The Routemaster series struggled the first time around by not really being loud enough.
They were really quiet.
Really,
for the for the rated outputs, they were so quiet.
Exactly. And so they re-engineered them, and they've re-released them now with chrome fascias. They used to have like a black and white thing. And they are now much louder and much, much better. So the Routemaster 800 is obviously 800 watts. I do tend to think that's like too much, like 500. I've never struggled to get a very clean tone from a 500 watt amp.
I mean, 500 watts is so loud.
I know. I don't quite know what this trend is for 800s at the moment. I guess it's like people who are after absolutely flawlessly sparkly clean.
Monster rigs, basically.
Yeah. It's cool. I think 800 watt heads limit you when you're sharing cabs, because not all cabs are going to be rated.
Hashtag
to deal
not all
with that.
Cabs.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So if you had to lose one of those, which one would it be?
The orange four stroke I think is really cool. What makes it tougher for me is it's absolutely not the product for me. Like, it's orange trying to actually go outside of orange's comfort zone, which is like rock and roll stuff, and they're trying to make something that is more Mark Bass's territory. Yeah. Not in terms of weight, but in terms of a session-y sounding
cleaner
amp.
And brighter.
Exactly. And I just don't think anyone looking for those sorts of things will ever.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Look at an orange, will ever even consider an orange. Mm. So it's a bit of a, I can see this product being discontinued relatively quickly.
It's a weird name as well, isn't it? The four stroke. It's like they've got the
two stroke booster. Was it two?
Yeah. It's like, it's weird that it's kind of nearly shares a name with one of the pedals that's completely different, and it also is so different from the rest of the, you know, it's OB1. And then the
power rating.
Yeah, and then the power rating. It's so weird.
It seems weird that they didn't at least go like FS1, if they're going to want to call it the four stroke.
The weird thing with Orange in general at the moment is that they've got some great products, but they kind of, you know, they had Tiny Terror and it kind of like changed the entire market. And then they've had loads of other amps, but they've only really ever sold Tiny Terror. And now they're kind of like, what else can we do now? And I think they're trying to find their feet in a a different part of the market.
So are we keeping the orange four stroke, or are we saying goodbye to the four stroke?
I think the Routemaster's better.
You want to keep the Routemaster, Jay?
Well, I said it's not just up to me.
Well, I know.
But I would prefer the Routemaster, I think. Is that what you use? Is that what you've got?
No, I use the ABM series, which is sort of their pro series. The Routemaster is their entry level series of stuff. I think the Routemaster stuff sounds great. It sounds like perfectly reasonable as like a rock and roll bass head. it suffers from the same thing that a lot of entry level stuff does, is that I probably wouldn't want to put one in the back of a van.
Okay.
And you know,
so
and it's not very easy to rack mount. They haven't made it in like a rackable chassis.
Yeah.
I don't really.
Basically, we've got 8 products left. So if we're going to lose 3, I think we should lose one of those 2 heads.
Yeah, I'd say let's lose the 4-stroke. I think.
Okay.
So I don't think there's a market for it.
Fine.
I just don't think it's as good as the OB1. Series, I think that just speaks volumes. You know.
So we've still got 2 compressors left: the Seymour Duncan Studio compressor, which we've spoken about a lot; the BC1X that we've spoken about from Boss. Which would you rather keep?
Well, should we speak about some of the other bits that we haven't mentioned?
Oh yeah, okay, let's do that then. Yeah, so also on this list we've got the Fender Flea Jazz Bass, which
the only remaining bass, actual bass.
Yeah, which there's not been a huge amount out this year, has there?
So that's kind of the very little. I mean, these are certainly the best bits. There have been some other things, like as usual, Ibanez have
of course
brought out 5 or 6
new models
of Van Coll,
yep,
spalted. Burst
just
versions,
hard to get excited about them for this sort of list when last year there was 10 new ones, and then the year before that there were 10 new
and
ones.
You know that none of them are going to stick around.
I know, and next year or 6 months' time there'll be 10 new ones, and so very difficult. But this, I mean, the Fender Flea really stood out because, as we talked about in podcasts that we haven't recorded yet, but will have come out before this one, Fender are changing things a lot in the line, and it's been a time of a bit of stagnation for them. Like, obviously, classic vibes have been really good for Squire, and vintage modified's been really good, and the classic series has always been really good. But there has been, apart from the Dimension base, which we've never really got excited about, there's not been much new stuff.
No.
And to see a cool new signature model, signature models are really where they're doing the innovation, I guess, at the moment, or doing fun stuff. Everyone knows that. Apart from you, Joe, and maybe you, Matt, we're not that bit huge fans of the Chili Peppers here, but, you know, Flea is a really well-respected bass player and kind of an interesting dude.
And this bass, first mistake. It's not based on a bass that he especially used for the Chili Peppers.
No, well, okay, fine. I realise that.
This is the bass that he uses specifically for...
He is intrinsically tied to that band.
Yes, he is. But this bass is the bass that he uses for all of the Atoms for Peace stuff.
Okay.
It's based on his, and he has used it a little bit on some Chili Pepper stuff, but he uses it alongside a precision bass, which was the precision bass that he recorded Dillhouse in the Crematorium by the Mars Volta on, single greatest album of all time. He uses his real 1961 jazz bass.
And this, how close is this to that?
So it's close-ish because it's not a custom shop. So So what this is, the Fender Flea Jazz Bass is a faded shell pink 61 jazz bass with a torque guard, rosewood board, and concentric stacked knob controls.
And a flea neck plate.
And a flea neck plate, yes. but it's a completely... His bass is unbelievably cool. This is essentially a road-worn relic version of that.
Much like they've done with other people. You know, the Nate Mendel was...
That's right,
the
relicking, sort of road-worn relic.
There was a Mike Dern road-worn, wasn't there, at one point?
Right, so this is more of a heavy relic than either of those two. I thought the Nate Mendel was an excellent example of the relic. You always thought it didn't look good, the relicking on the Fender.
I loved it.
Whereas I thought it was subtle enough that they got away with it, because the problem that these guitars, mass-produced relic jobs, have is when there's too much of it, it looks obviously mass-produced.
Well, it was like the early road-worn Fenders were like the neck was so heavily relicked.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked too fake. Yeah. I think it was maybe the colour and the way that they're relicked, because it's slightly thicker paint, so it kind of looks like it's been cut out rather than kind of naturally worn. And I think the subtler colour of the Flea base kind of fits in with the relicking.
Really?
Slightly nicer.
Yeah, it's just because there's too much relicking on the Flea base, so it looks quite fake. I thought when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is clearly the best thing ever. There is actually a pink... I love stack knob 61 jazz basses anyway, so the fact that there was a pink version of that for under £1,000, that was amazing. I thought it was going to be absolutely brilliant, and then I actually got to see it up close, And I was like, it's really not very convincing.
I mean, in the words of Flea, he says it's been a bass for so long, I guess it stopped being a tree a long time ago.
Of course. Yeah, that makes sense. It makes real sense. It's made of real tree wood, so, you know, that makes sense. So
I just think...
So I think it's great. I think it's brilliant. And a really, really welcome addition. But actually, I think maybe...
Where's its innovation in a way?
I would spend £1,000 elsewhere, I think.
Let's talk about the last thing on this list, and then we'll cut a couple of things and put them into order. So the last thing, did you add this? The Dr. NoFX Blackmagic Bass Fuzz Distortion?
I didn't, no.
Did you add this, Matt?
I did not, no.
How did this get on the list? Jay, was this your one?
This wasn't me.
Okay, so we're going to delete this from the list, right?
Dr. NoFX makes some good stuff, but this... You know, we've talked about them before, but as a bass fuzz, I did listen to some of the things. I just think, great, but you could spend money elsewhere, I think. I think, once again, fuzz on bass is so difficult to get right.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so difficult to get right.
I don't know how this ended up on the list.
Let's get rid of it.
It's gone. So we've got six things left. We need to get rid of one. Seymour Duncan Studio Bass Compressor, Tech 21 Bass Fly Rig 5.
Which we haven't spoken about yet.
We should talk about that now. So we've talked about it a lot in the main podcast, though, haven't we? Certainly the Fly Rig series.
I think this is my favourite product.
I absolutely love this product. I loved the Fly Rigs, like when they first came out, and even the Richie Kotzen signature one that came out after that, but... I thought the idea was brilliant. I love the size that they've managed to actually get this into the sort of size and shape it is, and that they're Sans Amp quality effects. Like, that's super high end. Like, their pedals are sort of £200 plus a pop.
Yeah.
And you're talking about four of them-ish in a board for £300.
It's so fantastic.
It's absolutely the answer for like session players, yeah. wedding bands,
particularly for bass as well, because like generally bass players, you don't need that many effects.
No.
There's four or five essentials that if you're doing a covers gig,
yeah.
will cover 95% of the song. So yeah. why not buy them in a box that's, you know, it's multi effects done right. They're super high quality individual effects that are kind of mashed together, rather than, you know, going down the digital presets and menus and stuff like that. You don't have to fuss with any of that stuff.
You look at the front panel and you go, compression, great, boost, great, tuner, great, Sans Amp, great, octave, great, chorus, great, XLR, and headphone out.
Yeah,
like
the octave can also be a fuzz octave. You get that option on a little switcher.
But having the XLR out, because I think if they hadn't put the XLR out, it would have been
the worst
product.
You could turn up a gig, you know, if you're doing a functions gig, for example, and have, like I said, 95% of your songs covered, and you don't even need to take an amp necessarily. You know, as long as the PA is good enough, you could turn up for a wedding gig. And, you know, wedding gigs, the hardest bit about them is getting the stuff there, probably, and dealing with drunk people. But apart from that, it's, you know, it's getting your bass amp on stage and stuff. Whereas this... You know, someone takes the PA, you turn up with your gig bag, with a bass, with the Fly Rig 5. That's everything that you need.
Yeah.
The only thing I think this is missing that would make it really top-notch is an effects loop.
Yeah, and we said that about the other Fly Rigs, though, because you said it'd be nice to have one between the Sans Amp
completely.
And the first distortion.
Completely. I think if you've got, like, a pedal that you really...
Like an envelope filter or something, which for bass is quite...
Yeah, if you just have, if there's like a thing that you really need, and you know, that's the only thing that I think is missing from the Fly Rig series in general. Now, how the thing is that it's so easy to go down a rabbit hole with that. You could quite easily
you need an effects loop
in between each one. Yeah, absolutely. And so I can understand why they haven't done it, because I think that it would be too easy for them, and then all of a sudden the pedal is, you know, is twice as long. Yeah. It won't fit in your gig bag anymore. So
just imagine that—the size of a guitar case, like four or five.
Comes in its own case.
So, you know, that's the only thing that I think is maybe a slight shame. But other than that, I don't think it can be faulted. I think the
Sans Amp that comes in, the actual preamp element of it is the VT as well, rather than the driver.
So it's the Ampeg voice.
It's almost a perfect product.
It is an absolute... At the right price as well.
At the right price.
At the right price.
So, with that in mind, which of these products are we going to lose from the top five? So, Seymour Duncan Studio Bass Compressor, Tech 21 Bass Fly Rig 5, the Ashdown Rootmaster 800, the Mark Bass Nano Mark 300, the Boss BC1X, And the Fender Flea Jazz Bass.
I'd say probably the Rootmaster at this stage.
I think that, for me, that would be the one that has to go.
I was almost going to say bass compressor, only because there's a compressor in the bass fly rig.
Yeah, we've got three.
There's three compressors, but the BC1X, I did a demo video for it, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. Like a great alternative to multiband compression.
Yep.
It's just really clever.
Definitely, definitely. So maybe the Rootmaster 800?
Yeah.
Joe, for someone who loves Ashdown, you didn't seem super impressed.
I think it's great, but it's not the product. If they'd released a new sort of ABM series head with more drive in it, I'd probably be singing its praises.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got
unsurprisingly, the best bass amp of the year is the Marbase.
Yes.
I mean, we could have told you that from the start.
So
we've got work on narrowing it down.
We've got five things left. Any suggestion on what we want as our fifth best product of the year? Now, I didn't think I'd be saying this, but the Fender Flea Jazz Bass, Joe, you sounded a little down on. Like, you said it was good.
I think it's good.
It a top two?
No, it's not a top two. It's cool because it's great that, I mean, Fender are notoriously so boring when it comes to colours. Like, that they're in standard ranges, so They want you to pay the bucks to have interesting colours. So it was great to have a cool colour, but I just wish it hadn't been Roadworn.
So we're going fifth on this list.
Yes.
Okay, fourth on this list. Which one? We've got two compressors which could vie for that spot.
Yeah, so out of the two compressors, they're quite similar. The Seymour Duncan Studio Bass Compressor and the Boss BC1X are both aiming at a similar place. They're both, well, the Boss is not multiband, it's more complicated than that. Yeah. What's the name of the tech?
Multi-dimensional processing.
But they're both that sort of concept, so proper compression.
Make gooderer compressors for bass.
Rather than sort of squashing your sound, traditional compressors. If I was going to get one, I would get the Boss BC1X, because I don't think I've ever heard anything. I've never plugged in a compressor and it sound good before I knew what the controls were doing.
Yes. So
you could dial everything at 12 o'clock and it will find a way to make your signal sound, your bass sound good. Try doing that on a CS3.
Well, I guess when you talk about the CS3, I guess that's the benchmark here.
Yeah.
Well, and also,
the BC1X had to be better than,
but it's not
one of the biggest selling Boss pedals of all time.
Thing. Yeah,
I appreciate that.
The difference. It's the MDP that's making the difference.
Of course. But like, if it didn't sound as good as the CS3,
what's the point of
doing
it?
Then no one would have bought it. Yeah, that's that's my point.
It does.
Whilst technically it's a different thing.
Yeah,
it's not, is it? They're both compression pedals, and they are both someone other than Joe. Someone's going to choose one or the other. Mm. Obviously, unless you're a compression enthusiast, you're only going to have one.
No one would be that weird.
Well, I would.
But that's my point. And like, it had to be better than,
I think,
what you've always argued is the benchmark for a compression pedal.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always been the compressor.
What else is nice is it runs at 18 volt, which for headroom, obviously, if you're pushing some things, it's nice, especially if you've got an active bass.
How does everyone feel about putting the Seymour Duncan Studio Bass Compressor as fourth on our list of best bass gear for 2016? Third on the list, we've got left the Tech 21 Bass Fly Rig 5. I'm thinking that we're going to put that at number one. I don't know how you guys feel about this.
I think so.
No one's disagreeing on this.
I know. Well, we've already said that is a perfect product for bass.
Yeah.
So it's down to the Boss BC1X or the Mark Bass Nano Mark 300.
All the Mark Basses is a slightly smaller chassis of a head they already made. There couldn't be a blander thing.
I don't think it's easy to argue with what he's saying.
I think you're correct. I think it's a very much a third place product, with the Boss BC1X coming in second. So that's our best bass gear for 2016.
That's cool.
There's five really good products.
So I'm really glad that Tech 21's in at number one.
Me too, 100%. Totally. So fifth is the Fender Flea Jazz Bass. Fourth is the Seymour Duncan Studio Bass Compressor. Third is the Mark Bass Nano Mark 300. Second is the Boss BC1X. And topping the list is the Tech 21 Bass Fly Rig 5. as described by Matt Nye as the perfect product for bass, which it really is.
Yeah.
Talked about all the different situations it can be used in. Let's have a couple minutes break and we'll come back. And do we need a break actually? We're just going
to
discuss
let's just go straight to
gear of the year.
Unless anyone desperately needs to
need to pee?
Good.
No,
well,
I'm good.
So as well as joining all the other products that are already through to the final, we went on to the Facebook group.
This is laughable.
facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum and asked you, dear listeners, you know, what are your choices of the year?
They've actually selected the Fender American Elite Telecaster.
Yes, they have. So, not as number one, I should say. So, listener's choice, basically, we put it out. We said, like, nominate the products that you want to nominate, much in the way that we do for each of these categories. Then we got people to, if they got seconded or someone else mentioned it in the thread, they went through to a poll where we got people to vote on it. Nice democratic poll. And the five that made it, that had the most votes are... In number five, the Fender American Elite Telecaster.
That is unbelievable.
At four, the Earthquaker Avalanche Run. At three, the Boss Katana 50. At two, the Squire Affinity Strat FSR Sparkle. And at number one, the Reverend Billy Corgan Signature.
Nice to see that we're on the same page for the bulk of it.
Well, we are indeed.
No, what are you talking about? It's a fix, isn't it?
Our listeners know what is good. So,
where did the Earthquake Avalanche Run come from?
I wanted to bring it up because I don't know I don't know anything about it.
It got mentioned in the thread. Someone seconded it. In fact, it was mentioned multiple times in the thread.
It's that one. That isn't this year, is it?
It is. Yeah. They released like 18 new pedals at NAMM.
I remember.
Or Summer NAMM, I think.
Yeah.
It got the fourth most votes out of anything.
That's
in the
thread. That's a big
pedal.
A lot of people have been using that for the ambient stuff.
Yeah. So Reverend Billy Corgan Signature is already in our final because it did well in the best guitars of 2016.
It was the same as ES8 last year, I think.
It was indeed. So going through to the final is just the Squire Affinity Strat FSR Sparkle goes through to our list. So, gentlemen, we've got our finalists.
Cool.
Holy moly.
We have indeed. So we've got...
Oh, we don't get to...
We don't vote those. They just go through as they won. It was a completely democratic poll. Yes, it is. You can't get your grubby mitts on this one, corrupt Branton. the final of the Guitar Nerds Gear of the Year 2016, which we will do tomorrow, is between the Boss Katana 50, the Honey Boy 5-Watt, the Echoline Roadrunner, the T-Rex Replicator, the Rockstock Bright Switch, Barefoot Buttons, Boss ES8, the Ernie Ball St. Vincent, Yamaha Trans Acoustic, the Ranger FX Dwarf Bleep, the Reverend Billy Corgan Signature, Squire Affinity Strat FSR Sparkle, the Tech 21 Bass Fly Rig 5, and the Boss BC1X Compressor. Blimey.
It's a shame we're not super rich that we could give that away as one mega prize.
Yeah, maybe we should just contact, you know, representatives from companies like Boss and say, if you just give us the stuff, then we can give it away as a competition prize. Anyway.
Oh, God, so even though we said, right, only one... brand per category.
Yep.
Boss have still managed.
It's a fix. It's a fix. Don't worry.
They'll
get voted out anyway. Right. So thanks for joining us for day four of the deliberations. Come back tomorrow when we will be, I'm sure, viciously tearing each other apart in the final of Gear of the Year 2016.
The final.
It is the final indeed.
The final.
So, thanks for listening today. Join us tomorrow when it gets heated and sweaty.
Nice.
Hot.
Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.